Blog Talk Radio.
Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Pennegal.
And we have a pretty action-packed show tonight. We got two guests. I know you're going to be very depressed, Tony, but they're MMA fighters, both of them. This is going to be like the seventh week in a row I haven't had a boxing guest for you, but we tried. We were supposed to have a female boxer on, but back out at the last second.
And see, what's tough right now, because I'm working so many extra hours, I'm not getting the chance to really sit back and work on getting some guests. Because I got a good number of people that I've had, passing conversations with. Guys like Joey I, some other Philadelphia fighters that I know, some other people that I've met on MySpace and Facebook. They never have given me verbal commitments. Yeah, they'd like to do an interview. And I never get the chance to really put it all together.
Yeah, we got an interesting story on the blog yesterday about 2 hours open with some famous boxers, one with Bernard Hopkins and one with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I saw your email. You know what? I bet I could do 2 hours with each of them, not ask the same questions twice, and really do a great job. The only problem is, when is it? Noon. And guess what? Guess who ain't going to get any time off of work to do that?
Yeah.
That was something really great about my old job. See, my old job, like, near the end, I would do some work on the phone, getting appointments set up and meetings set up at hospitals. And then I would do all the legwork on it, getting the advertising done, getting the books sent out, making all the advertising, doing spreadsheets and stuff like that to track our attendees. So for a while, I could literally be doing my work and have my headphones on and listen to music, or I was at my old job. I used to be on conference calls. You would get invited on, you'd tell them to me, okay, Floyd Mayweather is going to play Ricky Hatton, we're going to do a conference call. I'd be like, yeah, shit, I'll be on it. And I would actually do it while sitting at my desk doing my flyers, my spreadsheets. I can't do that where I'm at now.
Right. Yeah, that sucks. Can't quit the day job sometimes.
Yeah, no, it sucks, too.
But I'm sure we can get these guys talking. One guy actually goes all the way back to UFC 2. Can you believe that? He's still fighting in MMA. UFC 2.
Wow.
From
what are they on now?
UFC 183. No. 133, I think, is the next one. And it's pretty good.
Oh, wow. So see, here's the thing. You have a UFC number whatever like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So you figure even if they do one every 2 weeks, that's 26 a year. That's about 5 years. Five, maybe 6 years. That's like saying, like, oh, my God, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao is fighting another pay-per-view. And they fought in a pay-per-view. It's like, well, Manny Pacquiao fought his first pay-per-view, I think it was like 2004, 7 years ago.
Well, this guy, David Hollywood Hewlett, 16 of 9. We're going to have him on in the 8:30 slot Eastern. And then we have, this guy is a Strikeforce prospect now, but as I said, he's in UFC 2. And we also have 4-1 Lumumba Sayers, who is wrestling jiu-jitsu expert from Denver, Colorado. And he's fought in a few different leagues, but he's going to be on the 9:15 hour. He's already on Strikeforce. He's a middleweight. So I'll talk to those guys tonight, and I didn't really get a chance to see much boxing or MMA this weekend. I stayed pretty busy. But all these guys should be pretty good interviews. I know there's some pretty interesting stories out there. Phil Davis is supposedly injured, so he's going to be pulling out of his fight with Rashad Evans. So that throws a new wrench into things. Since John Jones is going to be fighting Rampage Jackson now, the whole thing. So who knows what's going to happen there. Did you get a chance to witness any great boxing this weekend?
Well, I got to witness some piss-poor officiating. I mean, it's bad when a decision is so bad that all three judges get suspended. The Paul Williams fight, I got to see some of it on replay because I was out that night at the Italian Festival. When I got home, it was like the last few rounds, and they're like, and there's another round for Lara. I mean, Harold, with the high pitched, cracking voice, he's like, I mean, I got Lara way ahead in this fight, and it's a no brainer. Paul Williams needs a knockout to win. And then, I closed my eyes for a second, and I heard the judges, and I think Paul Williams is the winner. I'm like, was I dreaming that Lara was kicking his ass? And then I realized I wasn't. And I've said this before about Paul Williams. I actually like Paul Williams, and, he's got a good action-packed style. But since that show, even the first day with Sergio Martinez really showed his weaknesses, and I've seen it before, Williams has those low shoulders and that high chin, and now God knows what to do. They know how to counter him. You know, he has his right and left hand so low when he throws those punches, people are going to be willing to stand in the pocket and just blast him. And he doesn't have great head movement. He's like a sitting duck. And I like the guy. And whatever weight class he fights at, whether it's 147, 154, or 160, you know, he is always going to have that big-time Achilles heel where he's easy to hit. And, I mean, his chin is better than it looked in the Martinez fight when he got starched. But his chin is also not Jake LaMotta's. Oh, by the way, happy 90th birthday to the Raging Bull.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, we got a couple of deaths to talk about. Again,
here we go.
We got another cancer story with a boxer, former boxer. Actually, not even a former boxer, but a boxing writer. George Kimball died. Never knew he had esophageal cancer, but he just died out of the blue. Now today, I get the news in the boxing leagues that the Klitschko's father just died, the guy who helped him.
I read that when I got home from work.
Clean up Chernobyl. He's 64.
Wow.
So that's got to be some kind of some type of radiation or something tonight with cancer. So two more boxers taken by cancer. It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
And his two sons were jeez. Luck of the draw.
They were.
I gotta see his mother. His mother must be 10 feet tall. Their mother, I should say. So that's kind of sad, obviously. But now let's talk about Vitaly Klitschko fighting David Haye. For what purpose, I don't know. But,
first of all, before we even look ahead to that, we got to remember that Vitaly's got a very tough fight in September against Thomas Adamak. That fight's going to be big over in Eastern Europe. You know, Adamak, the Polish fighter, you know, against Vitaly. You know, the Ukraine fighter based out of Germany. That's going to draw a huge... And I forget if he's in Poland or Germany, but no matter where, it's going to sell out, and it's going to be rocking and rolling. And that's going to be a tough fight because Adamak is easy. And he's shown that, especially in that fight. Like we call he's got a granite chin part. He's got the heart of a lion. And both these are using the cut. So I can definitely see this being a gory fight. Both guys have the philosophy that a good offense is better than a good defense. So I see this being about 1,000 times better than Vladimir Klitschko and David Haye.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Randy Lara in that the fight that was so controversial this past weekend, I saw him in Vegas here. At the Cosmopolitan, his controversial tie with Molina, Carlos Molina, I think his name is, who's now a big picture in the division, you know, all of a sudden came out of nowhere. It's funny, both these two ended up in some pretty big spotlights since that fight. And Molina came back for both, but he was here for both of the Friday night fights that I saw here in Vegas at the Cosmopolitan. And now Arislandi Lara goes in there against Paul Williams, who's always been a favorite of mine until he kind of fell apart. And I expected Lara to get crushed based on his performance against Molina, but it seems like Molina is just that good all of a sudden. He just came out of nowhere. But,
you know what? One day we'll hit that button. I remember a fighter back in the 80s by the name of Fearless Freddie Pendleton. And Fearless Freddie originally out of Philadelphia, then he moved on to Miami. And this fight, thinking about it now, makes me smile a whole lot, and you'll realize why in a minute. Fearless Freddy was a 500 fighter. You know, I think he was like 15-15 or something like that. And he was getting ready to fight on ESPN on Thursday Night Fight. And he was brought in basically to get knocked out. He was the opponent. But Fearless Freddy, you know, he changed his career was 500 because he, you know, taking some fights on short notice. He had some bad managerial, you know, decisions. And he was being booked in fights to lose. When he finally, you know, got on the right track and he started taking his career seriously and started running more and started training more, Fearless Freddy became a hell of a good fighter. He eventually went on to win a world title and he gave a young Rocky Ruelas a hell of a fight before losing by decision. So Fearless Freddy steps in the ring with a guy by the name of Roger Mayweather, who was expected to beat the living shit out of him. And Fearless Freddy feeling some confidence in himself and training hard and, you know, really focusing. A blistering right hand in the sixth round and knocked Roger damn near out the ring. That makes me happy. So, and then from there, he got that boost of confidence that he needed, and he goes, you know what? I just knocked out a former world champion. Maybe I can be a world champion. And he did. And you get a guy like Molina, you know, I mean, maybe his early career wasn't, you know, up to par. Maybe he took some losses early in his career and never got out on track. And then one day took his career seriously and started whipping some ass. Emmanuel Augustus, the guy that was barely over 500 his whole career. The man could fight. He just got ripped off on a lot of decisions, and he made some dumb career choices at the same time, but the guy could fight.
Yeah.
Just some days the chips fall in your direction, some days they don't.
Yeah, Molina just turned it on against Lara, and there was no reason he should have lost that fight. You know, I don't know what those guys were doing scoring that fight, but he gets incredible body shots, number one. And number two, he could just go and change direction and levels like you wouldn't believe. And Lara just could get nothing but straight punches off, and they weren't getting any leverage or causing any damage. And Molina just came into his own. He didn't really have that much of a flashy record going into that fight, and then now he's on the big stage. So it's kind of interesting, you know. It's one of those cases where what happened in stay in Vegas. But he's a great fighter. I'm going to have to try to get him on the show one of these days. I've seen him fight live twice. What else we got in the news? So New Jersey suspended these judges for the scoring. This is the first. I have never heard of judges being suspended.
I think the first decision,
115-114 and 116-114 for Williams for the scores. And so people thought that Lara got robbed. Is that the deal?
Yeah. A lot of people thought Lara got robbed. I think Williams told Lara got robbed.
So does that mean even the guy who scored at a tie is in trouble?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, it looks like all three judges are getting suspended. The guy that had a draw, that's a little bit more acceptable than the other ones. But the judges that had it the other way were just dead wrong.
Right.
Be right back.
Well, that's a pretty huge allegation. You know, Dana White has decided to just willy-nilly and go and provide a winning bonus to a guy he thought won a fight that the judges screwed up. I don't know if boxing promoters can do that in any way, but I would hope that they would for Araceli Lara that they go through that. You know, and if it's possible to arrange a rematch, of course, that's always remedy things.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, obviously they can, force a rematch in there, which, you know, wouldn't be a bad idea, to be honest.
We shall see what happens there. But in MMA news, not a whole heck of a lot going on right now. I know we've got another UFC coming up one of these, any one of these days. Check that out. 1 second. So that's the only big fight of the weekend. Wasn't there something else going on this weekend? Another.
He won that by third round stoppage. I did not get to see that one. Kermit Cintron also got handily defeated on the same card.
That's the one.
And the fight's on Friday night. Wow. It's one of those Friday nights. Like, I wasn't really planning to go out or anything, and I'm glad that I didn't. Because I had so much going on Saturday. I'm like, I'm just going to chill in tonight, get some stuff done, work on a few things. And boy, am I glad I did, because every fight on ESPN was just fantastic. I think at one point they counted like a total on three fights of like 8 knockdowns or something.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I didn't get to watch any boxing this week, really. Just kind of tuned it out for some reason. Falling asleep during the heavyweight fights the weekend before. That was rough. We have a Strikeforce Challengers coming up on the 22nd of July. But actually, there is a big UFC event coming up immediately. So King of the Cages is the next UFC. It's at the end of the month. Fedor versus Henderson is on the 30th of July. All sorts of talk about Fedor should retire. So crap I keep hearing. It's very funny to me. Nobody's going to tell that guy when to retire.
Yeah.
Except maybe Vladimir Putin. UFC 133, it's happening August 6th, so we got to wait until August for the next big event. Evans versus Ortiz 2. What is this? Rashad Evans versus Tito Ortiz. I didn't know they made the fight already. That's going to be the main event for UFC 133 in August.
And where is that at?
Philadelphia. I don't think I'll ever even be able to get my own hands on a press pass for the UFC at this day and age, unless I steal it. But this is an interesting fight.
I want fake ones. Just come up. Make them look like they're real. You can do that.
I'll have to take a picture of some real ones.
Yeah, make them look like they're real and then send them to me, and then I'll get my friend to believe that I'm going to be in press row, and I'll be all jealous and I'll laugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mike Pierce, a former guest, is going to be there fighting. Mike Thomas Brown, a guy I went to high school with. I mean, not high school, went to college with. I think he was there at the same time. He wrestled at the same college, I know that. Nam Phan is fighting on that card. A guy who was all over the place on the Ultimate Fighter, but he improved unbelievably. So, it's a pretty interesting card. Even for a guy who likes boxing. Rich Frank, old legend there, is going to be there fighting Nogueira, Antonio Rogério Nogueira. You got to get into this MMA craze, Tony, as much as you
never
think about it.
Never.
You know, it could be a niche for you. You got to teach these guys some boxing. I think it's like one of the major weaknesses with a lot of these guys' games.
Yeah, but see, you gotta remember, understand something. I am very much a traditional boxing coach. Even the type of boxing that I could train to those guys, I mean, I would teach them a lot of good things, but it would be hard to incorporate into a martial arts style because of the, you know, defense against takedowns, defense against kicking, and things like that. I can't teach any of that, and, I mean, from what I would teach would be strictly boxing. What I teach is hard to incorporate into something else.
Right. But, you know, the thing is...
My teaching is really good.
The thing is, these guys, they already train with traditional boxers. We don't really focus it for MMA. They learn on their own to focus it for MMA. The only real rule difference is, like, you can hold and hit in MMA. And, of course, the gloves are thinner. But even Freddie Roach is teaching George St. Pierre, one of the best pound MMA fighters. That's been in the news a lot lately. You know what else has been in the news a lot lately? That's I don't know if it's good or bad, but they're really saying a lot now that the Floyd versus Manny, it's just not happening. Never. Not even a possibility.
I called that how long ago?
Yeah. Freddie Roach keeps saying it more and more, too, so that's why I thought of it.
I called that a year ago.
And I don't know whether that's just trying to get it out of our minds so we don't think about it for a while, or whether they want to kind of create the opposite reaction of getting people talking about it again. Going to make it a controversy, but Golden Boy came out and blasted Floyd. Now we have this situation. Freddie's inanimate. It's not going to happen. And the whole performance-enhancing drug issue is still going on with the lawsuit. It's a pretty contentious situation. But, you know, I still think on the periphery, it really has to happen. You know, they have to do it. It doesn't look like they're going to quit anytime soon. And unless Floyd goes to jail for a little while. there's a possibility it could still happen. But we'll have to see. I mean, it's going to be interesting, to say the least. See what happens between that
then. And here's why it won't happen. Okay, you got two guys, and they're not, neither of them are bending. Okay? Well, every time Pacquiao meets the man, Mayweather makes up another one. So you really got to put the blame there on Floyd. Now you look at it this way. Both these guys can make a lot of money right now. I mean, Pacquiao's going out there, and he's fighting, he's fighting Marquez again, most likely, and that'll be an interesting fight. It'll be a third fight. You put Marquez on the downside. You have Victor Ortiz. The only way it would work is if people boycotted their fights, and that's not going to happen. You got too many Mayweather fans. After they're so anxious for Floyd to come back in September. Then you got a lot of Mayweather haters that are going to watch that fight in the hope against hope that Mayweather gets knocked out. On the same thing, you got so many Pacquiao fans out there. When he fights Marquez again, people are going to buy that fight. And then and so many people are going to buy Mayweather fans are going to buy it to hopefully see Pacquiao get beat and say Mayweather is the best guy in the world and this and that. So basically that's what you're looking at. Until those fights get boycotted and those guys aren't making any money and they're not making any sales, keep fighting whoever they want.
Well, we shall see. It might be too late for you to catch it depending on what jurisdiction you're in, I guess. But I mentioned that there's a series about Bruce Lee. on Fuel TV that premieres tonight. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, there's a lot of MMA guys in there, guys who have been used to being on TV, like Josh the Punk Thompson is in it. And a lot of guys that are recognizable, talking about Bruce Lee's impact on mixed martial arts and Bruce Lee in general. It was a pretty decent striker, to say the least. Let's get our first guest on the phone. We're a couple minutes late on him anyway. We have David Hollywood Hewitt coming on for the first half an hour segment here or so. And then later on we have Lumumba. Well, I hope I'm pronouncing it. David, go all the way back to the first UFC, second UFC. I hope that's the actual UFC, not some other league at that time. We'll see. I'll have to ask one about it. Let's go Skype phone. What's going on? Hello, David.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We also have a boxing expert on the line, Tony the Tornado Pentacal.
Oh, okay. Hey, what's up, Tony?
I'm Mark. How you doing?
Hey, doing good, man. This is a practice. Let's go eat some fish.
Fish,
yeah,
huh?
Good. Yeah, yeah. I got to run back in the gym right now. I left my water jug in there. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good. Now, we're just looking at your record, and we see you go all the way back to UFC 2. Is that the UFC?
The Underground Fight Club.
So totally. Is a, right.
Yeah, not the actual UFC. So.
A clever matching initials, I guess.
I guess you want to do whatever you can to get people's attention. If you're starting out in like Clay County, Alabama in 2000, there's not a lot going on down there, you know.
So what was that like? At least, you fought 2000, 2001 is when you get started with this Underground Fight Club. What was that like getting involved at such an early stage of MMA? And you're still
like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, it was 10 or 11 years ago. I'm sure a lot of people new to the sport or watching the sport would be interested to know what it was like back in the early days.
Yeah, I mean, let's see, back then, I guess, it was before, like, Zuffa got a hold of the UFC, and UFC was kind of, it was sort of like right in that, the dark period of the UFC, and Pride was on top. It was all about giving King the cage and going to Japan, and I mean, that was what everyone was looking at. You know, it's totally, totally different, you know, climate than it is now. Especially, though, I mean, like, you know, the South is not the most progressive region of the United States, and they didn't, you know, there's a handful of people who were really, really into the sport and who really just gave, you know, that's just what they did. Like the guys who competed in stuff like the Underground Fight Club, the other small promotions that popped up around there. And
the rest of people like didn't even really understand or know about it, you know, like as a professional fighter, which, you know, and I was in college and stuff the whole time when I was, well, you know, when I started out. And so I was like, okay, so what are you really gonna do? You know, once you know, what is this fighting, whatever, you know. It was like you didn't have like good venues, didn't have like big promotions. I mean, Alabama got an athletic commission that recognized where they got an MMA section of their athletic commission like last year. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't even recognized as a sport until like 2010 or 2009. Yeah, I'll tell you, it was we're on our own, I guess you could say. I was training with like four different groups. There's a guy we taught jiu-jitsu out of a Taekwondo school. There was a Japanese jiu-jitsu place that I went to. I was at a boxing gym, and I was working with some sambo guys. Like, you know, just literally like anyone who had anything to do with like, you know, submission wrestling and fighting and grappling, like that. I was training with him.
Are
you there?
I'm
sorry, I'm getting a little weird.
No, that's right. We can hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Now, what's your ultimate goal with this sport? You've been in it for a while. You're still going. You're fighting in a lot of different leagues over the years. Being in the cage, SC, Ring of the Rage in the Cage, Wild Bills Fight Night, and around. What's the ultimate goal to as a professional?
Well, you know, I mean, I would say the ultimate goal, like, now I've made Las Vegas my home, and I would say that my main goal would be to make enough money that I, you know, to get paid and to make enough money fighting so that I can just do that and, you know, take some money and, you know, have all the life and my job. But ultimately, I guess I would love to open up a couple of gyms and eventually just in this area, you know, try to get your income off of gyms and different places. I hope to go back down south where the scene, you know, we still have still pockets of people. There's a lot more, you know, usually we're still, you know, still not as advanced as out here. And I feel like, you know, the coaches down south or whatever, you know, I feel like I'm in school with most of the coaches and everything, and the people who really remain the sport can allow places where they can learn and teach that, you know, were consistent and good and wasn't just, you know, enhanced karate idea, you know, that helps them out.
Right. And how did you get into fighting in the first place?
In the fight?
Yeah.
I think it's hard for me, not just as a, well, I was a junior in the college, but I threw my first sophomore year. And I went out to see where my dad was living at the time, to Boston. And I just wanted to, I always wanted to just take some time and really get good at the martial arts. I just did a little big fan of it. I didn't really know anything or anything like that. But I went to Boston and I wanted to run capoeira, which is, you know, the Brazilian dance style, which I thought was really cool. And I'm teaching jiu-jitsu to my peers, which is some guy from Curitiba who was teaching basically about like judo and jiu-jitsu stuff. And I learned like one arm lock and a little, you know, America from the mountain. I was just addicted, just got hooked from there. I hooked up with Boston Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from that point, which is, that's where, like, Kenny Florian started to help. And, so we got involved. I kind of marked out a little bit. I went back to Boston, you know, I trained there for, like, 1 month, and I was up there for that summer. And then I went back to Birmingham. I went back to school, so I actually moved to a bunch of different places, like, a month later, after, like, a month of training or whatever. I started coming down five clubs, I started fighting for them, and I started winning, just kind of tried to get a little bit older every time I thought I did.
Cool. So we're in common then, because I'm from the Boston area, and I'm out here in Vegas now. So that's kind of interesting. What do you think about the Boston area, the fight scene out there? I don't know if it was it a regulated sport while you were there, or was it... were you there when it was unregulated?
when I was training in Boston, I think they're getting turned for a couple of weeks and just that. I think they have like an ultimate translation thing going on that some of the guys up here were probably good. He has like full MMA rules, so I don't think it was like it is now, I guess. He's like, we're talking like 2001, 2002. So it wasn't quite worth that. I knew he was always like, it's just like New England and just as far as like their ability to get MMA regulated, like in New Hampshire, they along the combat zone 38. And New Hampshire has it been like they haven't had it like in New York City yet, right? So they're still coming along. I guess the same affair, but I was up there, there's always really good coaches and they're good coaches to train, good athletes and everything everywhere, but all that matters a lot of competitors are good with the team.
Right.
I always had a good experience, so I was still training up there.
And how about Vegas? What do you think of Vegas?
Vegas is crazy. Vegas is crazy, man. It's almost MMA goes. There's not another city in the world like this. It's what it is.
Yeah, you don't have to go far to find a gym around here. Everybody's trying to get into it.
I would say that the toughest thing kind of that, with Las Vegas. Okay, first of all, you have so many world class gyms and so many top fighters, it's easy to take for granted all the resources that you have out here. I think that would be the trickiest thing about training. Because it's easy to kind of get into a routine, just kind of go to these classes or whatever, and you're like, oh, I could be sparring with top 10 guys in my weight class right now, and I'm just choosing not to. It's right there. Whereas, if there's a top fighter in your zip code, in other cities, you're going to go seek them out, versus out here where everybody lives there. So it can be easy to forget the resources that you have.
I would think the best thing, too, is the ability to pretty much train outdoors whenever you want. That gives you problems, maybe a dust storm or a thunderstorm, rarely. But, I've been out here coming from New England, and, 108 degrees in humid is a little different than 90, 95 or something in humid. It's as hot as it usually gets around there. So, just being outdoors in the hot weather, and having the mountains all around you here. That's got to be good for conditioning and all that, of course, if you like to run outside.
It really is. I'm from Southern Mississippi originally, so it's basically subtropical. It's very, very humid. And out here, it's dry, it's hot, with altitude. So it's funny, too, if you come from, wherever you come from, unless you're coming, from a higher region, you come out to Vegas and you're training with these guys and who are working at the top level or whatever, and you're just getting stomped out and you're gassed, and you're like, man, why, I know these guys are good, but I felt like I was doing better than this. And a lot of it's the altitude and just the environment. It did take some time to adapt, I tell all my friends, I've got a bunch of friends who fight in other places, and I'm if you ever want to come to Vegas, come, you got a place to stay and train, but you want to make it, a week or so of a trip, because it takes a while to adjust to the altitude and just the climate, and it is an advantage. It is a little bit of a confidence booster whenever I fight, especially when I fight on the coastline or something. Because I know that I'm going down to sea level, and I've been training at altitude anyway. So, it's not like I'm coming down from Albuquerque or anything, but I do have I feel a slight edge. You go down the, and you get on the treadmill and you don't get tired. And you're like, wow.
Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence they have the Olympic Center, training center in Colorado, in the Rockies there.
I would love to try. Are you in Colorado now, huh?
No, actually, I'm in Vegas, but I spent the year in Colorado at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, so very familiar with that area and the altitude factor.
Oh, yeah. And if I went and trained while I had a grudge or something, I would die. I would die for a week and a half before I got my body would just adjust. I mean, regardless of what I was doing,
right,
walking around.
Now, as far as your own style, do you particularly like a certain submission, or do you prefer striking more than grappling? What's your style like?
You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I started in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so that's my foundation. I'm super comfortable off my back, but in a fight, you don't want to go there, so it's just sort of a rule of thumb. What happened was I started boxing, and I started doing these tough man boxing matches. I fight three people every Wednesday. So kicking them off. An opportunity. And I saw just another opportunity. One of the things, that's why I have so many fights. Like, my record is, I wouldn't say that it's entirely representative of the experience I've had because of, all of the, because I just took every single opportunity I did that coming up to fight. Like, if there's any kind of fight, like, I'd sign up and do it, you know, and just walk. I would say, anyway, the point of boxing, I realized that I've got a good chin, and B, I've got a good punch. So, I was submitting guys and just trying to, take a guy down and control him and pound him out until I got my first knockout win. And then I was like, oh, that was easy because, you don't have to burn yourself out trying to fight for takedowns or whatever. You just sort of you hit him and fall down. I've had people describe myself as kind of a brawler, but I think I'm more talented, and I don't feel like I'm a brawler. You know, like, I just favor boxing and jiu-jitsu, like clinch work, I would say.
There you go, Tony. I'm a big boxing fan. We were just talking about that.
I know. I'm looking forward to you.
Tony's our boxing guy, and I was just saying, you got to. A lot of these guys in MMA have got to be learning their boxing, because I think that's the major thing, the big gap in with a lot of fighters. And it's interesting, I said that George St. Pierre is being coached by Freddie Roach now.
You know why George is good? And this is something that, this is an accidental advantage that people who don't have a lot of good in the medium to train at have. Is if you want to learn how to box, you don't go to the boxing coach and make them. You go to the boxing gym and learn from a bunch of boxing. That's the only way to learn. You know, you're not going to learn how to box. Like, you can't do boxing. You can't learn your boxing in the MMA gym and then go fight a boxing match. You can't do that. You'll get your head knocked off. You have to train boxing with boxers.
We're having a debate on that shortly before we got you on the air. Because Rich was talking about my experience in boxing, and I train people. And Rich is like, you should train MMA fighters, for striking. And I said, Rich, I said, I don't know how much that would work. And I said, you don't understand something. I said, I'm a very traditional boxing guy. I'm a South Philly boxing pug, nose beat up a little bit. I fought, the famous Philadelphia Gym Wars. I was in them. And so I'm like, I teach a lot of stuff like balance and stance and, proper movements, pivots, defense. I kind of know the sport in and out because I've been doing it for so long. And I said, I don't know if that would work for an MMA type of fighter. I said, because my boxing is so traditional, I don't incorporate it where, you would be, defending any kicks or defending any takedowns or anything like that. And I'm glad you're saying that that is the way to train an MMA fighter to learn how to box a little bit.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because you're not going to beat a boxer. This is what you have to do. And this is what George St. Pierre does, and this is, again, I get scatterbrained him. Okay. He does his boxing with boxing coaches. He does his kickboxing with kickboxing coaches. He does his jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu coaches and does wrestling with the wrestling team. And then he has his MMA people that he gets with where he ties it all together. And that's where he fills the gaps. He makes the adjustments in his footwork. He makes the adjustments in his head movement. Like, you can't have the same head movement in Muay Thai as you do in boxing. You get kicked in the face. You know what I mean? It's a different, you know, and you have to take all that stuff into consideration. But when you're training the styles in their purest form individually, and you develop the correct habits so that when you do end up in that situation where you're fighting a guy who's a good boxer who you can't take down, you can box him and that's fine. You know what I mean? You can play his game instead of getting caught by, you know, somebody who understands the raw format of it, you know. Whenever I learn, I've always preferred to do my boxing if I'm sparring with a bunch of MMA guys and we're like, okay, well, we just don't kick, we're just going to box. Like, I don't feel like that's really boxing for him. Like, I've got to go to a boxing gym and spar with people where I'm, you know, we're actually boxing. That's why boxing gets really good. And if you go and do that, and then you go back and spar with MMA guys, like, you're going to run the room because, you know, they're not going to be, I don't know, it's a mindset thing. It's something about a focus on the technique and just how you digest it, you know. Well, for me, and I've heard that's how Georgia trains, and I think I personally feel that's the best way to learn. I mean, well, think of it this way, like, if you want to learn jiu-jitsu, do you want to learn it from, you know, do you want to learn jiu-jitsu from, you know, some wrestler who runs an MMA school, or do you want to learn jiu-jitsu from, you know, one of the Gracies or something like that, you know?
Right.
Like, if you're trying to sharpen your grounding. Like, GSP will, like, he'll go to, he'll fly down to Cuba to work on his body shots. You know, like that's the place to do it, you know? I mean, you can learn the technique other places, but if you're working with the best, and, you know, people who specialize in it, then you're going to get better faster. And that's my opinion.
Well,
not that you can't get good, you know, but.
The other thing it sounds like, too, you're getting at is, you know, to have a good mixed martial arts style, you have to be the one to tie all your best skills together. So you kind of got to
figure out
how good you are at each individual sport and what your strength is. And you also have to know every other sport that you can possibly pick up in the martial arts. I think it is important to separate it first and then and put it all together with the way George St. Pierre does. Not everybody could probably afford to do that. Not in MMA, but...
Right. It is nice having all those specialty coaches in the same gym. That's another thing that's great about Davis is that the Muay Thai guys that I work with are pure Muay Thai guys. You know, if I'm working with a boxing coach, I'm working with a dude who he doesn't know anything about MMA. He just knows about boxing, and that's how I prefer to train. I would rather work with a boxing coach who doesn't know anything about MMA. He's not watering down the boxing technique because he's trying to, you know, think, oh, well, what if a guy shoots on me? Like, I'll worry about that when a guy shoots on me, you know? Like, I want to know how to break somebody's rib with a left hook. You know, that's what I'm concerned about. I'm not worried about shots when I'm doing boxing. Like Bruce Lee would say, you just study everything, you learn all of it, and then you use what works. And Jeet Kune Do isn't really a style. It's the philosophy of, you know, whatever the best way, whatever works best for you. Like Bruce Lee, his whole, like, power hands forward and his life at work and, all the stuff that Bruce Lee did, like his, what he looked like when he fought was specifically his body type and him adapting, like, all the stuff that he learned to what he was good at. It wasn't the best way for everybody to fight. Like, if you're a 250-pound, muscle-bound dude, you can't move like that, you know? You can't fight like that, because he was a fast, strong little guy. And so he studied everything. That's how all the ingredients came out when he put all that in his head and got in good shape. But it's not the same thing for other people, you know. Matt Hughes is not built like Bruce Lee. He fought totally different. Guess what? His power was just fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you learn the stuff and then you use what works for you. So I guess if you study pure Muay Thai with a Thai boxer, you're not going to use all that stuff. You're going to pick up stuff that you like. Everyone's got their moves, in their particular style. They got a couple of techniques that work best for them. And if you can apply it to a fight, you will. And just say, if you can't, then it ain't going to happen.
Do you still follow boxing at all? Do you watch a lot of boxing?
Yeah, I really don't. I've never really followed boxing as a sport. I mean, I'll sit down and I'm a big fan of like some of the classics. I watch I'm a big Tyson fan. I like Ali a lot. But he doesn't. You know what I mean? Really, like, deep in that sport. But I'll sit down and watch a boxing match. I think it's interesting and everything. It's just I don't even watch basketball though. I've been missing just.
Rich obviously knows this. I like to tell it whenever I get the chance. Back in 95, Tyson just got out of prison. He was fighting in Philadelphia, his second fight back, at the now torn down Spectrum. And he decided to come. He was supposed to come in a week early, do some public training sessions at one gym, but he came in 2 weeks early and would bounce different gyms. And the one gym he went to was my gym. Now, I was in college at the time. I wasn't coming home until a week later because I was doing finals. But he did it where nobody could be in there. He had the gym shut off in private, and he used to bring his 200-pound heavy bag. Well, my dad hung all the joists in the ceiling of that gym, so he always walked around going, I put the joists in Mike Tyson's heavy bag. And Mike used to leave. Every gym he went to, they're mostly rec centers for inner-city kids, he left equipment there. Every gym he went to, so I got to use some of his old equipment.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Mike Tyson was quite the legend, And one of my favorite punches of his has always been the left hook. And
punch that again?
One of my favorite punches of Tyson's has always been his left hook.
I still do this as much as I can. He'd sneak that hook around the elbow to open up their guard so he could work the uppercut in. Oh, love it.
You look at his decline, I think it's when he really stopped fighting on the inside. He let people tie him up. He got frustrated. He bit Evander Holyfield's ear off. He stopped being that great inside fighter because he could mix the left hook in with the uppercut, and he could use the peekaboo stance to get out of those situations, and he just had so much energy that it got to a point where he wasn't doing his jump rope and he wasn't taking it seriously anymore, and he couldn't fight like that on the inside anymore, and that's where he lost it. And that left hook, though, that he had out of the peekaboo stance, it's one of the best punches I've ever seen a boxer throw at that weight, especially. He was a very cut heavyweight, and I don't think you'll ever see if these Klitschko brothers stick around until they're 50. You'll never see another heavyweight champion. He's an interesting character. Too much money to his head.
I'm curious what's going to happen in MMA if it gets to the point where, the top guys are making boxing money. Is it gonna turn into that? Is it gonna get all divvied up? I'm wondering it is interesting because MMA is so new. It doesn't really have a history yet. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. As it gains, as it keeps gaining momentum and stuff.
Yeah. What has it been like seeing it over the last 11 years from the inside? What's it been like to watch it grow to this point?
Every year is a little better than the next, I would say. It's just, but there's only, I'll go back home to Mississippi and there's a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu school, there's a couple of MMA groups that get together and train, there's a gym or two, and it's nice. It's nice to actually go to where my family and everything is and have a place to work out and you know, I'll go back and match these seminars and, you know, show them the groovy new moves around West or whatever. But, you know, when I finally came out here to Vegas was when I really felt at home, because all of a sudden what I've been doing every day for the last, you know, 80-odd years or whatever is, you know, instead of having to explain myself or be like, oh, but, you know, if this doesn't work out, then I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. Like, they're like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm fired. They say, oh, cool. And that's it. That's the end of the conversation. That's the best thing about it. Right there. So I don't have to explain myself. It's just normal. It's pretty something everybody does. You know, I'm in it's just a great team. You know, it's a great team for fighters, and it's a good place to train. So but you know what? I came through Vegas in 2000. And it wasn't like that, you know. Before Zuko took over the UFC, the only school in town was, I guess, a John Lewis school. And that's back when the Los Angeles area was really the place, you know. And that's where I was training for the summer. The first summer I went out and worked out. So, but I guess it was the place.
And what's been your best moment so far in the sport?
My best moment in the sport. That's a good question. I've had so many, just amazing, you know, I think personal stuff, you know, like a really good knockout or whatever. I think, you know, this stuff isn't on my record, but I fought 3 Shootacon tournaments. And I don't know if you're familiar with, the Shootacon, but they...
I've heard of it. It's a discipline, right?
I think Shootacon is like a section of... No question, it's like full contact and everything else. And the Shootacon, they call it the triathlon of mixed martial arts. Where they do, the first round is 3 sections that we fight, either 2 rounds per section or 1 round per section. It's like 1 longer round or 2 shorter rounds, where you have bare knuckle karate, and then in between rounds, they take off the gi, and they throw on boxing gloves and do Muay Thai, and then they throw on MMA gloves and fight MMA for the last part. And there's a lot of mixed martial artists that have kind of come through that scene, and it doesn't get recognized by any of the databases, but I've done 3 fights. I guess one of those tournaments I fought in Atlanta for the national thing, the United States belt or whatever. And the guy who I fought in the finals was Shawnee Carter, and he was coming off a fight in Canada, and he's a guy who I've been following for, you know, years, of course. So I went with Shawnee.
I think there's different contests and those different leagues and different disciplines that used to be a lot more popular kind of got crushed by the UFC. Specifically, their agreements with their fighters that they can't fight in, you know. Whereas when the pride was around, you know, those guys had a totally different format that they were fighting under, you know, totally different skills and mindset. In a fighter, and they didn't really get to cross-compete as much because the UFC just saw something came over and said, this is an exclusive thing. Now that the strike force hit the guy, Alistair Overeem, who won the K-1 Grand Prix. So I think it's going to show you, if you ever fight some of these UFC guys eventually, what the benefit of being able to fight in these different types of tournaments can do, physically, number one, but also, you know, for the skill set of the sport, you know, you got to pay attention to stuff like that. Being in the competition, that you really have to be the best of your game in a particular discipline that works for MMA. That sport, kickboxing, I think, is K-1. That's a pretty big deal to win that and be competing in Strikeforce as well at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
UFC just kind of grinds my gears with some of the things that they do, kind of exploit their fighters. I don't know if you noticed that. So.
Get on UFC 45?
Yeah.
They're buying up the competition, and I don't know, they're doing the big business thing right now. They seem to be forming a monopoly on the sport, and we'll see how that all turns out. You know, like I said, we're still like in the baby stages of this thing, and we'll see where everything comes to go. I don't know, not today, but to see one company that's really, they're starting, they're getting to the point where they're getting to where they can make all the rules, you know, where people don't get associated with the sport of martial arts from the team, you know, like, they're becoming this martial arts, and there's fewer and fewer alternative outlets. I don't know.
The thing is, you know, it's one thing if they're earning money and, you know, paying the fighters all of the main events, the figures, or, you know, God forbid, seven figures. Making enough money, they could pay somebody $1 million a fight. And not only that, but they keep doing these little things to kind of make it look like they're union friendly, even though they wouldn't tolerate a union ever. These guys just classically hate unions. So they do these things like they pass health care insurance there for their fighters and train them otherwise, so they have health insurance. So. But they'll
make
their rights and stuff, you know, like just to have all this leverage over them. And, I don't know, it's just the way they run the whole organization. And like you said, it's turning into a monopoly. It's amazing that nothing's been done to kind of win to that and figure out what they can do about it to change that.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Like, that's the question. What can be done? You know, what can be done to improve the situation? I mean, I believe in free market competition. So I feel like, you know, within the sport of mixed martial arts, there's going to be. I think there's going to be competition. I think that this will be a bigger point. People feel like I can do better other places, or I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, when the cat gets too fat, you know, people will go to places, and it's going to be, I don't know what's going to make that happen. Because even what you're talking about, like with the health insurance, how they pass that to sort of like a PC or whatever, but, you know, I've got plenty of friends that are in the UFC, and like my roommate, he fights, and he's like, look, the health insurance isn't, it's not that great. It's some kind of huge deductible or whatever. Like, for a major injury, you got to go get a checkup. Like, it's still expensive.
Yeah, I feel like they just did that for the story, not really for the major effort that it was. And their whole attitude is they're more popular. The organization is more popular than the fighter. So, you know, the fighter gets to use the label, but they get to benefit from it. You know, they get these sponsors lining up. They have to pay like $100,000 just to talk to the UFC, you know, in some cases. And just the way it's set up, it's to benefit these guys. And they don't seem to want to pass any of it on to the fighters that they should be. It's like they're just pocketing it. And, you know, they also got all that money from the Middle East there, from Abu Dhabi, over there. So, it's interesting. The whole makeup of it makes me wonder, like, what's going on with these guys? And, you know, what do they think they can do?
What's going on with them? They're making tons of money. You know, and they're making tons of money, and they're making It's kind of like any other big company, you know, that's kind of running the market. And you have, they would pay as much money as they have to keep, you know, to keep the machine going. And they won't pay us anymore, you know. So it's going to be a necessity. It's got to be a cause and effect for them to, you know, and I believe it'll get there. I think the popularity and the growth of the sport and everything, it will get to the point where, you know, the fighters are getting paid what the organizations can afford to pay them. But, as, you know, something will happen between now and then. It's not going to happen, like, overnight.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, it just keeps blowing my mind that you don't see a main event title fight amount to $1 million for the total purse for both fighters.
Yeah.
It should at least be that, you know, and there's got to be somewhere along the line these guys can afford to pay $1 million purse to a fighter for a big fight like that, especially, you know, these five rounders now that they're imposing on guys that aren't title fights. They just mean events now they want to do. Five rounders in the UFC. So we'll see how that pans out. But getting back to you, do you have any fights coming up and anything in the works?
Yeah, my next one is July 29th on Combat Zone in Salem, New Hampshire. I'll be going back to New Hampshire to fight another one of your guys up. I had a real good showing, I guess, 2 months ago at Combat Zone 37, and so that's what I'm looking at now.
Cool.
Yeah, CombatZoneMMA.com is the website. It should be available, you know, the 29th is the fight, so you should be able to get that video online by the 30th or 31st. It's actually a really good organization. They run a real tight ship. They have, like, kind of the same venue and same people involved in it every time. It seems real consistent. And, you know, I fought for a lot of Yahoos, and that particular show, they got together, which is good. It's nice to see, you know, they're kind of small, but you know they're making money because all the locals come out, and, you know, it was a lot of fun. I had a great time when I was up there.
Yeah, New Hampshire's nice. You got just enough mountains, just enough forest, you got rivers everywhere, lakes. It's a nice country, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
Watch out for those mosquitoes. I was at a fight up there once, an outdoor fight at a place in Guilford, New Hampshire, called Meadowbrook. And the main event fight, they had all these big spotlights out there, and it was kind of late at night. This giant mosquito came down and landed on the kid's leg in the middle of the cage. And the bug had drawn more blood in the fight than anyone else. Big welt on his leg, and there's blood everywhere. It's just from a bug. It's like, holy crap. Kind of funny. And I think one of the kids... but it's, one of the kids ended up killing it, I guess. But New Hampshire's nice. It's a good place to fight, I would bet. And what's the venue again?
The Rockingham Park.
Oh, Rockingham.
Yeah, sort of a big, like a big sports center or something they've got out there. Rockingham Park, Combat Zone 38 is the event. Combat Zone MMA is the website where the video should be available. Check it out. They got a bunch of fights on there too. Like, they have a lot of videos from their show. I don't know, it's really good production. You know, keeping their fight updated and everything is good. That's next, and then hopefully we have some big things in the works. All things, you know, if all goes well in New Hampshire, then we're looking at a handful of bigger things that I need to, you know, again, a lot of big maybes, I would say.
Sorry.
It's still exciting stuff, so.
Is there anybody out there you want to thank or give a shout out to?
I would say my coach, Tony Frickland, Throwdown Training Center out here in Las Vegas, and everybody out here that you know, I've been able to cross paths with and work with Ricky Vasquez out of manager out of Grudge in Denver, who's been great helping to keep me networked and you know, involved in the all the other stuff besides just training and competing. I can't like, it's hard to not thank anybody that you come across. I try to learn something from everybody that I love. So yeah. Oh, and on Twitter, I'm DC Hewlett. That's HULETT. And the website is HollywoodHewlett.com. Try to keep that as well.
All right. Well, sounds good, and we'll definitely keep an eye on you, and we'll be looking out for future fights, and just let me know if you're fighting Vegas. I'm here in Vegas, so hope to see you.
I wish it was easier to fight in Vegas. I thought my last fight in Vegas was King of the Cage, Stan Davis, and Eastside Cannon, the King of the Cage show they had out there. It was like the last pro show they had. And then, yeah, what do we have? We got Superior Fighting, we got MMA Explosion. And you would think that I'd be able to get on more Vegas cards, but it's harder than you would expect.
Yeah.
But absolutely, I'll spread the word if I get onto a Vegas card, for sure. I mean, it'd be so much easier. I love fighting Vegas. So much easier.
Yeah, there ought to be room for a big league to latch on here. I'm sure the UFC wouldn't take too kindly to that.
No, well, that's the thing, you know, and this is a cat's little box, where they live, so I'm not going to just move in and, you know, move into the UFC charges or put on pro fights. Now, it's a great, Vegas is maybe the best place in the world to be if you're an amateur, for sure, because, like, I know a lot of these kids, tough enough, they make more money in sponsorships than I make in a purse, you know, and, yeah, oh yeah. There's more sponsorship opportunities because the amateur circuit, like the UFC doesn't care about the amateur stuff, so they kind of let them do their own thing. So they're doing very well. There's so many fighters, and so there's no lack of talent or anything. So, there's tough enough in this broadcast, and tough enough the King of the Cage shows, those are on demand. I saw a couple of my teammates fighting their very first amateur fights ever. Well, pay per view for free.
Awesome.
And my very first fight is on a VHS tape in a box in a barn in Alabama. You know what I mean? Like they're different. Like you guys are getting sponsorships, and like I didn't get my first sponsorship until like 2007. I was like 7 years deep in the sport before like anyone was willing to give me any kind of money to do anything.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing.
Did you ever think the VHS tape was going out of style?
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I've got to get one of the DVD VHS converters, and then again DVDs are out too, so I've got to get that and then take the DVD and load that file onto my computer so I can put together an actual to highlight, because I have, like, I'll tell you, I had to go and archive some of those old pro fights because, they weren't on my record, and I needed to make sure that I could get as many of my old fights as I could on my record. I got a handful of them, you know, so my record looks halfway realistic. But, what I had to do that is I had to go and buy a VCR from a pawn shop for $5. The thing is, I hit eject on it, and the tape starts to come out, and then I have to pick the VCR up and shake it out, and shake the tape out so that I can just pray to God that it doesn't eat, like, the only copy of, like, this fight, the only record that had ever happened, ever, you know? And I have to sit there like a commissioner and archive all the, every fight, who fought who, the times of it. Like, I had to do all that. And then I had to get all that stuff archived, and then I had to send it to the guy who put the show on. I was like, hey, I did this. Will you please send it to the right people so that they can get finally recognized as, like, actual work? And that goes for who's. My teammate had his first fight this year on pay-per-view. Sponsors, you know, Invaders is a major organization. Their first amateur fight, you know, so.
Yeah, guys are awesome. Thanks, I guess.
It's
been great chatting with you, and we definitely appreciate it. And we keep an eye on him, like I said. And thanks for stopping by.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for talking to me. It's been good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a good one. Maybe
oh, yeah. Have a good one.
So I just want to mention a pretty good boxing show on ESPN2 this week. Looks pretty interesting, Tony. Friday Night Fights. Have you seen
them?
Yeah, Kevin Rooney Jr. fighting. Can you believe it? Do you know
what
Journey is? Are we still got you on, David?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I thought let's probably let you over there. So tell us what you enjoy most about the sport of MMA.
I like the fact that there's no right way to do it. You know, it's young enough that people say, hey, this is a technique, whatever I have to do. You know? And that's kind of the answer right now. You know, there's no right way to do things. You know? It's a time for creativity, and, you know, it's not about. I don't know. I mean, you see crazy new stuff in every event, you know. And still, I love that the sport is so new, and that you still can create and see new stuff every single time that you do. I think that's what I like about it. It never gets boring for that reason, and that's why I stuck with it for so long.
And any big plans as far as stuff coming up, other than the big show in Salem.
You decided to fight, or just did me?
Do you do any stuff for sponsors or appearances or anything yet? Getting that stuff going. Have you been able to do any kind of appearances for sponsors and stuff like that and get the side stuff going?
I have not yet, although I will say that the Throwdown people, my company is starting to push the fighters a little bit more, and I imagine there's probably new stuff like that coming up. Throwdown people have been pretty good to it lately, and we'll see how everything kind of materializes in the future. I feel like that's what maybe second half of this year.
It's kind of the thing. I had a sales job at one time where I really got into the website work and the radio show. And I had a Throwdown energy drink one day, and I saw a little thing on the side, and I read it out loud at one of the sales meetings in the morning, and everybody loved it.
Mm-hmm.
so it's pretty cool. I don't know if the energy drink is related to the training center, but it's definitely pretty cool. If you look on the side of the throw down cans, they have a little saying on the side of it. So, read it. All right, well, is there any final thoughts, any observations you want to make before we go?
Keep your eye on me. I feel like this is going to be a good year. I got some big stuff that I think is coming up. So, watch out.
All right. Awesome. Well, it was good chat. And keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate the time.
You too. All right. So there you have it. There's Dave Hewlett. Thought we had already disconnected with him at one point. He's still on the call. My bad. Anyway, we have Friday Night Fights I wanted to talk about from the Roseland Ballroom in New York City at the Roseland there. We have it on ESPN2 tomorrow night. Pretty big main event, 10-round light middleweight fight between Pavel Bolak, 29-1 with 19 knockouts, and Delvin Rodriguez, 25-1. And the co-main event is Raymond Serrano, 15-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Daniel Sostre, who's 11-3 with 4 knockouts. It's pretty interesting, but we also have two guys that have some interesting names on the very undercard. Stephen Gamache. I don't know if he's related to Joey. Let's see where he is. It doesn't say where he's from either in the little description because it's his pro debut. And, of course, Kevin Rooney Jr. is his pro debut, too. There's not much in the system about them. That'll be interesting if both of those guys are offspring of the actual famous fighter. Wouldn't be too much of a surprise, but interesting. We'll see. Yeah, let me see. He's from New York. Is Kevin Rooney the original from New York? I think he is, right?
Yeah, I think he was.
There is a little bit of a record on Kevin Rooney Jr. because he's 1-0. 1-0. Anyway, we also have on Saturday Marco Huck is fighting for his WBO Cruiserweight title, Hugo Hernan Garay is his opponent, 34-5 knockouts. And we also have a lightweight fight in this fight in Germany. Edward Gutnick, who's 29-1, 9 knockouts, fighting Lorenzi DiComo, who's 41-4, 18 knockouts, 1 draw. And a whole bunch of foreign guys on that card. Some pretty good fights, so. Nothing else really jumps out at me for this weekend, though. Yet, I should say. Well, we'll get back to that. We got to get on the phone with Lumumba. To be confused with Lumumba. Lumumba Sayers, 4-1. We'll finish out the show with that.
can reach my home band here at Fed. If you're trying to get in touch with me, give me a call at 303-433-3343. we can get more with our team and fitness. Everybody can be off the top now. But we can just tell them that it's all good for us.
Oh, doesn't sound like it's going to happen. There goes Lumumba. We're going to have to do the Lumumba dance on another night.
And I'll try to get working back on getting some Philadelphia boxing guests.
Yeah, who do you get in Philadelphia? You guys don't have any boxes over there, do you?
Nah, not too much.
They have more boxes in the United Kingdom than there are in Philadelphia. There's actually a pretty good fight on Saturday in Liverpool. John Murray, who's 31-0, 18 knockouts at lightweight, is fighting for the WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title, fighting Kevin Mitchell, who's 31-1 with 23 knockouts. And let's see, who's one? Do you know that? John. Can you hear me?
Well,
do you know the one guy who beat Kevin Mitchell?
No,
Michael Kitsis.
Oh.
West May. Now he's fighting a guy who's undefeated this Saturday. Also, I'm going to six featherweights, Ricky Burns and Cook, he and Nicky fighting each other. So they spell their names and everything. Ricky Burns is 31-2 with knockouts. Nick Cook is 32 with 15 knockouts. So WBO Spirit Featherweight title. That's pretty funny. Over the day in New Jersey on Saturday, we got Maurice Harris 24-15 with knockouts. Derek Rowley, 25-4 with 14 knockouts in a heavyweight UFA heavyweight middle fight. Big beast. The biggest duel on the card. The next best 7-0 against a 2-1 guy. That's Glenn City. One big card. We have a pretty interesting card that I'm missing in Dorchester this weekend, my freaking hometown at the Armory right around the corner from my house. Of course, guy heard a lot about I think he was on the contender, Tim Flamos, 20-6 with 8 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Darren Whitley, 13-24. 7 draws. That's rough. For the vacant USA Massachusetts state cruiserweight title. Also, Chris Triadi, a guy I've seen in action out there in Boston, at light heavyweight. He's 9-2. 5 knockouts, fighting Scott Dominic, 1-0. If I remember correctly, Triadi must have been out for a while because I think his record was like 8. We got Derek Silvera at light middleweight, 4-0, fighting Noel Garcia, 2-9, also in that card. Who else I recognize? So the last time Triadi was fought. He's from the other place I went to high school at, fighting at the Armory right around the corner from the house I grew up in. Yeah, he's only had one fight since I last saw him at the Roxy. He got knocked out in the second round in a fight with Eddie Caminero. And then he fought Randy Campbell earlier this year in April. Nice fighting Scott Dominic, who's 1-0 in Dorchester. Did you know Ty Cobb is fighting this weekend?
Really?
Nice. Ty Cobb's in heavyweight. 13-2. Fighting Jack Nicholson. No, Jason Nicholson. Jason is 18-27 with 2 draws. He's in Oklahoma, Lawton, Oklahoma. Comanche Nation Casino. Ty Cobb. It's a 6-round heavyweight fight. The main event is a middleweight fight between George Tadu Anapa. He's 27-0. 20 knockouts. 1 draw. He's fighting Jimmy Holmes, 19-2 with 10 knockouts, 2 draws. And it's spelled like Larry Holmes. So I don't know if they're related. What are related fighters if they are fighting this weekend. We're either going to fight in Honolulu, Hawaii this Saturday. Bob putting on a flyweight match between Julio Cesar Miranda, 35-5 with 28 knockouts, 1 draw, and Brian Hawaiian Punch Valoria, 28-3 with 16 knockouts, fighting for the WBO flyweight title in Honolulu. Also, backup fight there, the co-main event, super featherweights, Michael Farinas, 31-3 with 26 knockouts, 3 draws, fighting Fernando Beltran Jr., 35-5 with 19 knockouts and 1 draw. So, a bunch of light guys bounce around out there in Hawaii. Sounds pretty interesting. Good records. That's pretty much it for boxing. Until next week. Unless you have anything there, Tony.
Next week I'll preview the Judah-Amir Khan fight. Freddie Roach is coming out predicting a destructive Khan victory. We'll have to see. I got to put it in the old computer and see what that says.
All righty. Let me just see what we got coming up for MMA. I can get it. My computer is being very sketchy out of the time. Saying does not compute. Sorry, we figured out what you would ask Mike Tyson. What would you ask Bernard Hopkins?
Well, the first thing I'd want to discuss with Bernard Hopkins is his fight with Felix Trinidad back in 2001. Because at the time, I mean, he was a 3.5-1 underdog. I mean, Trinidad was mowing over everybody. And Hopkins came out and boldly predicted that he was going to turn it into a Philadelphia street fight, and he was going to get up in Trinidad's face, and he was going to, you know, whoever was tougher man was going to win. Threw the Puerto Rican flag on the ground, and then he boxed him. And I watched that fight that night with my trainer, who correctly predicted. I mean, if you think some of my predictions are good when I write those preview articles, I had nothing on him. He said Hopkins is going to box early. He's going to use his jab. He'll land like a pretty good shot, maybe on the second or third round. You know, good shot to get attention. So let Trinidad keep coming in. Then by the second half of the fight, I'll sit down on his punches and I'll really beat him up pretty good. And they'll stop him, you know, anywhere between rounds 10 and 12. And it was like, exactly. And I was like, Emmanuel Stewart didn't even predict it to happen like this. So I'm like, my trainer's got to know something. And 6 months later, Hopkins was boxing an exhibition in Philadelphia. And my trainer was working one of my sparring partners' corner in the main event that night. And Hopkins fighting this exhibition. And my trainer's, I guess he was about maybe 11 or 12-year-old son, carried one of Bernard's belts out that night. I still think something was a little fishy there. I'd like to talk to him about that. I'd like to talk to him, you know, about his, for years, how anti-establishment was. And for a while, it held him back. You know, he was feuding with promoters. He was feuding with networks. He was feuding with announcers. You know, him and Lonnie Merchant used to have a great banner. And he feuded with managers. And for a while, it held him back. But in the long run, it ended up working in his benefit. I'd love to talk to him about, you know, things like that, you know. When times people were writing him off. People were writing him off, you know, before his career even started. And he made it a point his whole career. And the fights that he fought best were the fights that people really thought he had no chance at. Trinidad, Carver. Second fight was Robert Allen, because a lot of people thought Allen was controlling that first fight before they had the freak accident where Hopkins got pushed down the lane. Those fights, his fights against the guy he just beat, you know, the French guy, the French Canadian guy, since I his name right now is obviously drawing a blank in front of me. Those fights, nobody thought he had a chance, and he comes back, he looks great. His fight against Kelly Pavlik. Every time the people really wrote him off and he was done and he had nothing left, he came back and shocked the world.
All right, well, we just sent an email during the fact that we'll reconnect with La Mamba. Sorry, I don't have Bernard for you on tap.
Thanks, cool,
you. Well, I will make a promise to you next week with La Mamba. La Mamba.
Hold on. Who's this?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Here's Unlimited.
Hello?
La Mamba.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
How you doing?
Good. We're taking away from training here?
Yeah, I mean, I got a little bit of time.
All right.
I've been waiting on your phone call. I thought you guys were going to call it 7:15.
All right. Well, what's going on? You got a fight coming up you're getting ready for?
Yeah, I'm getting ready for Derek Brunson. July 3rd on the card, Fedor versus Dan Henderson.
Sweet. So what are you looking forward to in that fight? What are you getting ready for?
What do you mean? Like?
What do you think this guy's style is going to be like, and what are you going to do to get around it?
I think he's a sloppy puncher. He's a wild puncher. That's why they call him Wild Fit. He's a wrestler. You know what I mean? Like, I read up on him. He's a 3-time national champion or All-American or something like that. I guess he's got some wrestling skills. You know what I mean? And throw some wild punches.
All right. So. And what got you into fighting in the first place?
My dad, I've been fighting since I was a kid, man. My dad, I've been fighting since I was a baby, man. My dad brought me up fighting. So, you know, I ain't wearing it like a T-shirt. It's in me, not on me.
Mm-hmm. So, what's it been like to be able to get into MMA so quickly here and be right up on the Strikeforce stage?
Say that again, I couldn't hear you.
What's it been like to get up so quickly in your MMA career, to be up on the Strikeforce stage of fighting?
Man, it's not quick. I've been fighting for a while. I'm 5 years in, man, you know. 5 years in, broken jaw, torn band in my hand, you know what I mean? This is where I'm at, you know what I mean? I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. I've been here for a while, you know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, cool. And what's been your best moment so far in the sport?
The best moment in the sport so far has been giving back to the fans, and being able to spread the gospel of God. You know what I mean? Spread the gospel of Jesus.
So your faith is a big part of your career and your training and all that?
Yes, sir. Without it, I wouldn't be anybody.
Yeah. All right. And as far as now, do you go for more submissions? Are you a striker? Do you consider yourself a more of a wrestler? What's your style like?
I'll say my style is 5-point stud. I grew up on the east side, 5 points, east side of Denver, you know what I mean? So, you know, get it in however you get it.
Yeah. All right. And what's your ultimate goal with the sport itself?
The ultimate goal with the sport myself is to climb to the top, be the best fighter that I can be, and actually give all the glory to God.
Right.
You know what I mean? I want to be like David. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out here and slay Goliath. Whoever steps in front of me, you know what I mean? With God with me, who can be against me?
Yeah.
I know in the boxing field, I know Evander Holyfield also had a very strong belief system. And a lot of times he was quoted as saying that almost when he fought, he was like almost in his own way preaching the word of God through his fist. I mean, do you feel like the same way when you step in the octagon?
I feel like, you know what I mean, the fight lasts for, 15 minutes if it's a 3-5 minute round, 25 minutes if it's a title fight, you know what I mean? I feel like I can go out there and display my skills, my God-given talent, and be able to give a message to the people afterwards, you know what I mean, and let them know what makes my light shine inside of me, you know what I mean, to be able to go out here and do the things that I do.
Yeah. Cool. And do you have any major role models outside the sport that helped you?
My dad. You know what I mean? My dad and my oldest brother, my coach Sheldon Marr, and coach Clarence Batch. Yep.
And what would you consider to be the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Cardio and technique.
So you do a lot of running, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I do a lot of cardio, a lot of technique, you know what I mean, a lot of grappling. You know, I come from the best grappling school in the world, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Edge MMA Fitness. It's the best out there. If anybody's out here in Colorado, they need to stop by and check us out on 5305 East Colfax. It's the best grappling school in the world, in my opinion. My coach, he goes around the world and coaches the USA team. And, you know what I mean? That's it right there.
All right. And what's been your toughest moment so far in the sport?
Toughest moment? I fought Strikeforce as an amateur, and I cut 20 pounds in 6 hours to make weight.
That's rough.
I was out like 2 months after that. I sat in the hospital for about a month after that. And, yeah, I think that was my roughest. Even I got my jaw broke before, but that wasn't even as rough as cutting that weight like that.
6 hours, 20 pounds. How'd you do it?
Steam room, sauna, walked through the pool for about 5 minutes, cooled my temperature down, get back to steam room, sauna, did that for 6 hours straight. Made weight, got to the scale, they had to hold me up on the scale. I was surprised the commissioner didn't stop the fight. I mean, didn't pull the fight off the car, but he let me go. I left the hospital 2 hours before the fight and jumped in the cage and fought. Got in there. Guy hits me. I take it. I go after him. I hold my breath for a split second and passed out.
That's rough.
So, yeah, that was probably one of the roughest moments of my career.
And are there any fighters out there that you really like to watch? You try to imitate their style or pick things up from them?
Oh, man, you know, you got to watch Anderson Silva. That dude is a monster. You know what I mean? You gotta, You gotta watch him. You gotta watch Cain Velasquez. You gotta watch GSP. I mean, them dudes are the best out there. So you know, you gotta watch them, check them out, see how they move, see how they work, see what they do to make these fights go for them.
All right. Anybody out there you want to thank or give a shout out to before we get to sign off here?
Yeah, I want to thank MMA and Fitness, 3D Martial Arts for helping me get ready for this this fight here. Sheldon Mar, Clarence Thatch, Nick Marr, Peter Tool, Taz Ashahi, you know, I mean, my whole family at the Edge MMA and Fitness, my family at the 3D Martial Arts, Triad Dragon, No Mercy Extreme Cage Fighting. All the above clothing line, they've been there for me for a while, and just want to give a shout-out to them, too. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. New World, too. New World.
All right.
And Phenoms Management Company.
There you go. We will put Ricky's Twitter information on the interview and everything like that for people to get information on him, too.
Yeah.
But I like how you put all the above at the end there. That was pretty cool. that's sponsored. But for participating tonight, and we'll be keeping an eye on you. And thanks everybody, all the listeners, for stopping by.
Okay, thank you. All right, bye.
Next week.